This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Special start time, 3 p.m. I tell you what, boys. Richie, Ezzy, good afternoon to both of you anyways. This 3 o'clock start time is just bizarre. I mean, I didn't know what to do with myself all day. Normally, you know, we're up early. You got to get, you know, have the show meeting, get prepped, get here, everything else. 3 o'clock, whole day ahead of me.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I agree.
Yeah. Whatever. I sort of enjoyed it, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the record of saying this from the start, that I wouldn't mind seeing Saturday night 9 p.m. start time home games here in Winnipeg.
Well, you're crazy. But
I know. You disagree with me.
Well, I mean, there's kids, Drew, that go to the games.
Yes, but one or two a year isn't the end of the world.
I don't mind. I agree with you. If you want to do an appointment game where it's once or twice a year at 8 or 9 o'clock, yeah, that's cool for the second half of the doubleheader. Now, I don't know what they're going to be doing long term now with the new deal.
Sure.
But I'm open to it, but not every week.
No, not every week.
You fell asleep during that Thursday game for sure.
Nope, I stayed awake. Really? I was very proud. You know, I was very close. I thought I was going to fall asleep around 8:30.
Yeah.
But I made it all the way. I, you know, took the dog out for a walk. Made it all the way to the end of the game. Dave Manuk, LegalCurve.com, can vouch for me. I was in charge of the Twitter account.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Game.
You were, yes, because I was watching the game with Dave.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, I was impressed with myself. Anyways, Jets-Kings tonight from the Staples Center. Finally, the Jets have now visited every single NHL arena since they returned. It's amazing that it's taken 3 years to finally get that accomplished.
Yeah, they're playing Olympic Stadium tomorrow.
That Olympic Stadium. Against the Mets?
Yeah.
Or against the 94 Expos? Either way. Anyways, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us on the show in about 1 hour's time, he's a former Winnipeg Jets player 1.0. He's now in player personnel with the Los Angeles Kings. He was also an assistant coach with the Los Angeles Kings.
Who on that trade? The Nelson Emerson trade. So I can tip off that it's Nelson Emerson.
Yeah.
Was Housley to St. Louis for Emerson and Quintal.
Mm-hmm.
Or Quintal.
Stefan Quintal is what I called him.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Who won that trade? Well, the best player in the trade was Phil Housley.
This is true.
So I'm going to suggest that the Blues ended up winning that trade because, you know, Housley's, you know, a fringe Hall of Famer.
Put up a lot of points.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah. So yeah, I would vote for St. Louis, but you know I liked Emerson on the Jets.
Oh no, Emerson was you know number 19.
Number 19. That's his Twitter handle is N Emerson 19. So you know that was an interesting trade. I was talking about that when I pulled up to the station this afternoon. Matty Leibel was on his way out, so we were chatting about that old trade.
Well, it goes Housley for Howardchuk.
That's right.
And then Housley for Quintal and then Emerson. What happened to Emerson Quintal after? Where did Quintal go?
Didn't he end up in Montreal? At
yeah,
some
he did.
Point?
I think. Yeah. I don't remember for who.
I don't remember for who either.
I should know that.
Yeah, you should. Let me ask you, you mentioned Housley for Howardchuk.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of the player that came from Buffalo that wouldn't report to the Jets?
They had a couple of Sabre guys. Like, they had the Shannons.
Yeah.
They played, Daryl Shannon played in Buffalo. I know Michael Grossa came from Buffalo, or it was Winnipeg, went to Buffalo. They had another guy. What's his name? I'm forgetting his name. Ed Ronan. Didn't he play for Buffalo, too, in the Jets?
I don't remember that name.
Who was the guy who didn't report?
I'm trying to. Was it like Scott Parker or something?
Scott Parker. He wasn't drafted by then.
No?
No.
I could. There's a player. Anyways, you'll look it up. There was a player in the Howardchuk for Housley deal that refused to report to Winnipeg, and I think he retired instead.
Really?
That was the end of his career. I don't recall him ever. Again, you know, odds are 50-50. I'm completely wrong.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Probably.
It might have been an NHL 94 trade that you made.
Yeah. It might have been, you know, the odds might be 60-40 that I'm completely wrong, to be honest. Anyways, Nelson Emerson is going to join us in about 1 hour's time. Jim Fox, LA Kings color analyst, is going to join us.
Jeff Parker.
See, I wasn't terribly far off.
Wow. And a first rounder. Yeah. Scott O'Neill part of that deal, too?
He may have been because he would have come over from Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Jim Fox, LA Kings broadcaster, is going to join us at 5 o'clock as well on the program. So it's a jam-packed 3 hours, a little bit different, 3 to 6, but that's still good. We're still going to have a lot of fun here with you.
Oh, yeah.
Ezzy, good afternoon. How are you, bud?
Good. How are you doing, Drew?
Doing very well. You know, nice. You got to sleep in this morning?
I was up not too bad.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Attaboy, that's what I like to hear. Guys, let's get started. Thursday night, Winnipeg Jets played in San Jose. And you know, I was some. I certainly was made to eat my words on Wednesday's NHL midweek show. I speculated that the Winnipeg Jets, you know, probably were going to finish the season with a whimper, way more than they would a bang. I said, you know, name the games they're going to be favored in. They certainly weren't going to be the favorite against the San Jose Sharks, but that that performance on Thursday to beat San Jose in San Jose was as impressive of a victory for this team as I can recall this year, because not only did they win, but they competed and seemed to play at a similar level to the Sharks. You know, when they played in Chicago and they won in Chicago, they got dominated.
I totally disagree.
Totally disagree.
Okay, I want to know, what do you think of the performance last night of Ottawa being Chicago?
I think that it's... I get your point. I think
it doesn't mean anything.
I know it
doesn't mean anything. The team's out of it. It means that they are playing hard when they're out of it. That's what it means, which is good. But they're still out of it.
Right.
So I mean, I don't read into it any more than that. They match up well with San Jose because San Jose is big and pretty fast, just like the Jets are, but they're not really physical, just like the Jets are. So they're a more skilled team than the Jets, but the Jets have played well against them. The problem the Jets have is against teams like Los Angeles, who are just so physical. You know, they're not as fast, but they're physical and they take away space. But overall, in the meaning of the game, Drew, I disagree that it has any kind of value other than team didn't mail it in, but played fairly hard. But they're done. I mean, where were these games against the Islanders or Calgary or any of those teams? Or against Vancouver, who had nobody on the team. Kessler left the game. Sedin was hurt. They hadn't scored. Burrows hadn't scored the whole season. And that's the kind of performance they had.
I agree with you. Look, I'm not saying that. The problem, the biggest problem for the Winnipeg Jets is that they play to the level of their opponent. And they have not yet learned.
And their opponent plays to the level of them.
Fine. And they have not yet learned in 3 years, and granted it's a new team with a new coach, they have not yet learned how to take advantage of a weaker opponent. They've done it maybe once per year. They did it against Dallas when Dallas, you know, on that yeah. Sunday night a couple weeks ago when Dallas was awful. They did it against the Florida Panthers last year when they beat them 7-1 or whatever that score was when there was just a cakewalk. But the number of games where the Jets have gone out and dominated a weaker opponent can be counted probably on one hand. Mm-hmm. And that, improving on that,
that's fair.
I think is one of the biggest offseason concerns for the for Kevin Cheveldayoff and for Paul Maurice if he's the head coach here next year.
Right. I agree. I think it was a good victory, but they're out of it, and it was impressive to see the way they played. I mean, going into this game, they didn't have a chance, so they went in there. Blake Wheeler was excellent. I don't think you can argue with that. And you know, the way that they've played is, you know, it is a little bit too late. I think I'd agree with that.
At the end of the day, this team doesn't show enough on a day-to-day basis. And good teams are consistent, not consistently inconsistent.
Right. I agree
and
with that.
That is the problem that you have. So they go into this game, and Blake Wheeler brings it. But Blake Wheeler has been bringing it since they were trying for this playoff spot, really, for the past 2-3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Ladd, those guys haven't been the problem. So if those guys have a good game, which they did on Thursday night, what about the other guys? I mean, these are still the guys you have problems with. Thank God Devin Setoguchi is finally sitting in the press box where he belongs, because it's been far too long. My issue with that, and I like that Maurice did that, that's it, he's a coach's decision. There's one problem. How much of an effect, I mean, it has some effect, I think, but how much of an effect is a coach's decision when the team's out of it?
Minimal. If he doesn't,
I don't know. I mean, I'm asking the question. I don't know. I just know a coach's decision against one of the big teams that they were playing against down the stretch when they were still in it would have probably had more of an effect. Like Setoguchi, I mean, the guy has done nothing.
Yeah, look, if he doesn't play another game this year for this team,
that's fine.
It's fine. I mean,
I don't think Maurice is going to put him in today. I don't know what the actual lineup is, but his comments.
He's not playing
today. No, he's not playing today.
There you go. So
I mean,
surprise.
Yeah, there's no lineup changes today except for Andre Pavlik's going to get the start. Yeah,
nice new mask he's got.
Yeah, I saw that. And the new mask for Andre Pavlik. You can check that out at tonight's game. But you're right. To bench Devin Setoguchi at this point in time
is better than nothing. But it's not as meaningful, I think, as it would have been if they had done it earlier.
Sure. If you bench him against San Jose when they played there on that first West Coast road trip a couple months ago,
sure.
The game they lost 1-0, it's got more meaning because that's a game he would have wanted to play in. He
right.
still, you know, it was before the trade deadline, so you weren't sure exactly if he was going to still be a Jet or not be a Jet at that point in time. Benching him now when it's, you know, when he's got 8 games left as, you know, as a property of the Winnipeg Jets, it doesn't mean anything. He's not coming back next year. There's no chance.
I'm still, it means something to the guys in the room, but it would have meant more if they had done it before.
Yes, I would agree that.
Happy is doing something. Like Maurice, I like that. You got to start. These players get paid. You've heard this before. These players get paid so much money that you can't discipline them unless you cut down on their ice time.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they don't really care. A lot of them don't care, don't listen. If Devin Setoguchi, you're saying something to Devin Setoguchi, and he's playing 15 minutes a game, 12 to 15 minutes a game anyways, deaf ears.
Sure.
He doesn't play at all? A little bit different.
Yeah. No, I don't think he's going to... I don't think he cares. I mean, what's it going to do? Maybe it costs him some money, but I don't think that it's going to cost him... I mean, his performance this year...
Well, I mean, nobody wanted him at the deadline, obviously. I mean, they couldn't trade him because of the injury to Scheifele.
I still...
But I'm assuming they weren't offered even a second-round pick because they would have jumped at it for that price.
If they would have been able to recoup their second-round pick, they would have said, God help you, thank you.
They would have said, you know, even if we lost Scheifele, we'll trade him. But for a third, fourth, fifth, different story.
Sure. They were still, you know, right on the playoff race at that point in time.
They were in it. I mean,
yeah, they were. They were still. They had a good chance at that point in time. Mm-hmm. It was just a matter of the games they lost. We know the games.
Right.
You know, the you mentioned the Islanders and everything else. Going back to my question before about, you know, playing to your competition.
Mm-hmm.
How does a team? And I don't know. I mean, you guys might not know the answer to this. So this, you know, how does a team learn to get that killer instinct? Is it just through, you know, trial and error?
It's a very good question. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think it's through confidence, Drew. And I don't think this team has that much confidence. I don't think when they go into the game, they expect to win. They feel like they're lucky to win.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you get lucky to win. But I think that teams that expect to win are able to put the hammer down more so. And I don't think the Jets are at that level. I think it's a talent, experience. And it not just experience in terms of years played. It's experience winning. Young players who win a lot are better than older players who probably have never won.
Sure. Just, you know, winning breeds winning.
Yes.
I mean, we've heard that saying before. But, you know, that like I said, I think that to me is, if we see them dominating, not even dominating, because you don't win games in the NHL typically 5-1
right.
and 5-2, but outplaying the weaker opponents. When we see them outplaying weaker opponents mm-hmm. on a consistent basis, that is, I think that's going to be the telltale sign that maybe this team is ready to turn a corner and become more than what they've been for the last number of years. They're going to be willing to take that next step. They're going to impose their will.
Well, I think it's a talent issue as well.
Certainly a talent issue.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, but, you know, the talent issues, we know what they need in this offseason. We know that they really need...
Well, what do they need?
Well, they either need a...
Well, I mean, are you band-aiding or are you doing a big change? That's the question. Or nothing.
Well, let's say they're going to band-aid.
Okay, so what's band-aid?
Band-aid to me is... Or let me rephrase. Not Band-Aid.
Okay.
They're not going to make a trade. They're going to fix it with signings and everything else.
Okay.
It's a very good third line center.
Okay.
And two, you know, average third line wingers. Or it's two, you know, or it's two very good third line wingers and an average third line center.
Okay.
You know, you hear a lot
That'd
of
be Band-Aiding it, I think, because nothing is nothing. And then doing a facelift is making significant trades and probably signing those players. So that's in the middle.
Or it's guys from the AHL giving a chance.
Well, but the guy, I don't know.
That's a possibility.
It's a possibility, certainly. And we'll talk
You'd
about
rather those guys be on the fourth line.
Well, I mean.
Oh, for third line, fourth line, it's a possibility.
The fourth line, I'm fine. You know, if Jim Slater's your fourth line center and you know, Eric Tangrady's there
and Anthony Peluso's
there.
No, not Tangrady. No, you need to replace Tangrady on the left side.
Even on your fourth line?
Yep, 100%.
Is he under contract for one more year?
Yeah, he does.
They don't play the fourth line. If they don't play the fourth line, bringing the same players back, Paul Maurice, if he's back, isn't going to play the fourth line. And let me tell you something. Claude Noel didn't play the fourth line either. So we need a third coach in here to not play the fourth line?
It's a problem because good teams use their fourth line.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the remainder of this road trip, the remainder of some of the games that are left after. And still coming up, we're going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets prospects. As you mentioned,
what's
coming up from the farm, we'll spend a segment on that.
I want to continue this after the break, too.
Well, we'll continue it all.
Not the farm, the juniors. Some of the farm, but...
Yeah, the farm, the juniors, the junior farm. Either way, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's a beautiful day every day you're with us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Did you say good God? Is that what I heard from
Come
you,
on,
Richard?
Girl.
Welcome back. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. you know, you start talking old trades.
Yeah.
And it gets people fired up immediately. Our buddy Dave Capone, he tweets at us, at myself and at Ezzy, says he thinks the Jets also got a first rounder for Dale Hawerchuk, which they used to draft Keith Kachuk.
He's correct. They also gave up a first rounder. Good job by Dave there. They also gave up a first rounder, which ended up being Brad May. So good job. The old Jets made a lot of nice draft picks, obviously. You know, you got Kachuk and your Solani and a bunch of those guys. Yeah, and they had some duds,
when they
too,
drafted Peter Forsberg, that was terrific.
Yeah, there's some duds, too, for sure. You know, but so far, these Jets are drafting fairly well, it appears. As well, the Kintal and Emerson, we didn't talk, you know, they got Kintal and Emerson for Phil Housley. What happened to Kintal and Emerson? Kintal gets traded to the Habs for a second-round pick, which ends up being Jason Doig, who played here for the Jets and the Moose, I believe.
I think he's still active overseas, to be honest.
Might be. Remember when he nailed Eric Lindros when he was on the Caps, and Lindros was on the Rangers, right by giving another concussion?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other trade was Emerson to the Whalers. Should ask him about that. For Darren Turcotte, beginning of the last season the Jets played here, Jets 1.0. And if you recall, Darren Turcotte was then traded at the deadline for Craig Janne, who played with Keith Kachuk, both American guys, but Craig Janne is so soft. Yeah. Great passer, but you touched him, he fell down.
I believe Janne, in game three of that first-round playoff series, scored the first goal at home that game against the Red Wings.
Game three?
Yeah, game three, the first game that would have been played in Winnipeg.
And Kachuk scored a goal, I thought, the first goal.
Was it Janne? I know Janne was involved
Kachuk,
in
Manson, and Kilger. Kachuk, Manson, Kilger.
Chad Kilger.
Yeah.
A blast from the past.
Yeah. Kachuk scored goal one, then Larionov scored goal two for Detroit. And then you had Manson on a 3-on-1. I thought Manson, Olchuk, Kilger. Those were the four goals, I thought.
Okay. As usual.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I'll tell you what. If it's between my encyclopedic knowledge, which isn't that encyclopedic, or yours, which is Rain Man-esque, I'm gonna choose yours. Jets obviously in action today against the Los Angeles Kings. You know, they played him the first game of the season, Jets victory. They played him, was that, a couple weeks ago, right after the trade deadline here in Winnipeg, a game that the LA Kings dominated. Jets, you know, lost handily, barely touched the puck. It was really not a great performance by the Jets that game.
No, Kachuk scored.
Okay.
You're right. Kilger, Manson, Olchuk, Kachuk.
Okay. I was wrong. I said Janne.
Sorry, I was right then. Yeah,
you were
sorry.
Right. We got other issues, obviously.
Pretty good.
Anyways, Jets and the Kings tonight at Staples Center. Jets' first visit there. A lot of Jets fans have been, you know, with them on this road trip, which I thought has been pretty fun.
Well, it's great. And then you're going to have the LA Anaheim, which is a short trip.
Yeah.
And beautiful weather, obviously. And you can get down there, you know, pretty quickly, some of the direct flights that go in there to Palm Springs or something like that. You're going to have a great amount of Jets fans. I know some people going down. It'll be great. And the atmosphere in a Hockey Night in Canada game is always fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be a good, fun time. You know, you got Mike Richards with the Winnipeg ties, and the Kings aren't really playing for anything. We'll talk to Jimmy Fox about that later on in the show. And neither really are the Jets. But I always feel like the Saturday night games just make it more fun.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like playing Sunday night football.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It doesn't matter. It's the spotlight game, something along those lines. Kings aren't playing for anything, not because they're out of the playoff race by any stretch of the imagination, of course. They're not playing for anything because they look like they're going to be locked in to the number three seed in the Pacific Division. You know, they have 92 points. Yeah. Anaheim's at 102 points. The Phoenix Coyotes potentially could catch the Kings, but they're 8 points back.
No.
I know it's not going to happen. Mathematically, it can, but it's not going to happen. We're going to ask, you know, Jim Fox about this, and you know, how does Daryl Sutter keep this team, keep the Los Angeles Kings interested in this game? Because it, like, you know, the next nine games are for all intents and purposes exhibition games.
Yeah, it's an interesting predicament, Drew, that they're in, because you don't have to win. You know, you want to get better and obviously be rolling into the playoffs. You want to be. I mean, you know, you don't have to be. You could still turn it on, but you want to be. And especially when you're going into the playoffs, and not like the old days, you know, even last year, where you really didn't know. You know, if they were locked into a spot, for example, they could have played 6-7, who knows what it would have been. Mm-hmm. Now you know it's going to be San Jose or Anaheim. And you know both of those teams are really, really good.
Yeah.
So you have to be at the top of your game going into the playoffs. I feel like that is one of the things that will help motivate them, knowing they're playing one of those teams and they hate both of those teams. Now, they've owned the Sharks in getting victories, you know, in series. They haven't dominated the games, but they've won. The Ducks are obviously their big rival in that big line, and those games are great. So I think that will be a huge motivating factor for them.
Ezzy, do you think that the Kings might have an advantage in that? You know, as we discussed, they're locked into that third spot. You know, if anybody has a little minor injury or a nick or a bruise, there's no need to take any risks and play anybody who's injured. Meanwhile, the Sharks and the Ducks are going to be killing each other to win that division and finish first overall in that division and play against the wild card teams. You know, do the Kings maybe get an advantage as a result of the fact that they can sort of take it easy for the next 8-9 games, whereas their chief opponents are tooth and nail for every point
yeah,
they can get?
It's a good question, Drew. I think there is an advantage, and as you guys mentioned already, they really are locked into fifth or sixth in the Western Conference. They're not going to win the division. They're not going to get home ice advantage. So while the Ducks and the Sharks kill each other to get this either the first or second seed in the conference, the Kings are really just trying to get as fresh as they can. Not fresh in the sense that they don't have many injuries. I think the only injury right now they have is Fraser, because Dwight King is in the lineup tonight. So I think that really the only concern for them is trying to score more. And really, if you look at the Kings, it's unbelievable, but they're bottom 10 in the league in scoring. And they've had trouble scoring all year. And you're talking about the top guys. Dustin Brown's had a really tough year. Yeah. Justin Williams has had a really tough year. And you look at what they're trying to accomplish going in. Their defense is really, we talked about this on the midweek show, they've got a top five, arguably top three defense in the NHL. They've been relatively healthy most of the year, and they've got Willie Mitchell back, and tonight Matt Green is a scratch, but they've got Alec Martinez in there. But we've talked about this. Doughty's having a Norris season, only helped by his performance in the Olympics. So yeah, I think, Drew, it does give them an advantage that really they're going really strong right now. Their record since the Christmas break has been excellent. Five wins in a row, and then they went on that, what was it, seven wins or eight wins in a row, right around when they played the Jets. So I think San Jose and Anaheim, and we've talked about this, even though San Jose and Anaheim are competing for that division lead, they still don't want to play LA, and I think they know that one of them is going to play LA, and one of those teams has a good chance of getting beat up in that first round, even if they're able to get through it. Yeah. LA is arguably the hardest team to play against in the NHL. They really are, and we saw that when they were here at the MTS Center. The Jets just didn't seem to be able to compete on a physical level. They're just so big, so fast, so strong, and so I think the Kings look good right now. They probably look like the best sixth seed we've ever seen in the Western Conference, and that's saying a lot, Richie, because they were the eighth seed when they won the Stanley Cup, the only eighth seed to ever do that.
Right, they're big and they're skilled, and they don't go out of their way to ever take chances. So you have to go through three guys minimum to get to their net. They never throw three guys in deep. They always have a guy back, and they're big, and they hit, and they take away space, and they're long. All right.
They're playoff tested as well.
They're playoff tested. You guys are exactly right about that. I guess another question to ask about the team is do you rest some guys down the stretch? Do you give a guy a day off or two? Remember, Kopitar, Doughty. I'm going to talk to Jim Fox about this as well. Kopitar, Doughty,
Carter,
Brown. A lot of these guys have played played in the Olympics. Maybe you give them a little bit of a breather.
I think you absolutely do.
I think you do. I don't think you play them on back-to-back nights from here on out. I don't know if they have any back-to-back games, mind you. But if you do, I'd rest them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly there. There's no reason to play them. There's no reason to try and put these guys through the grinder.
It's been a long season.
And
especially for the Olympic guys.
Yeah, and Daryl Sutter is a smart enough coach to know.
And those guys who went to the Olympics, they all played a lot. It's not like they played fringe guys. Wheeler didn't play.
You know, Richie, talking about flashbacks, we're going to ask, we got former Jet Nelson Emerson coming up, as you guys mentioned last segment, coming up at 4.
Yep.
The coach for the Chicago Blackhawks when Emerson scored that goal was Daryl Sutter.
That's right.
Really? Well, then that changes. I'll have to reword the question, obviously.
Well, we should ask him if he remembers who was on the ice for that goal, specifically that overtime goal.
To your point, Richie, the Kings have two back-to-backs left. This coming Wednesday and Thursday, home to Phoenix at San Jose.
I'd hold them back. And I wouldn't even travel. I would just team in L.A.
Yeah, and then the 9th and the 10th, they're in Alberta, both those games against the Flames and the Oilers.
With the travel, I mean, you know, I would play them against the Oilers because they're easy to play against, and I wouldn't play them against the Flames.
Right. And Richie, before anybody thinks here that we have some type of bias or something for the Los Angeles Kings or we're overhyping them, that's not the case at all. I'm not a Kings fan or anything like that. I'm just saying that this team, and again, we saw how dominant they were in Winnipeg, but the only reason they're in sixth place, the only reason, is because the Sharks and the Ducks are that good.
Yeah.
In any other division, this team is probably winning the division, really. And that's including the Central, by the way. I think if the Kings are in the Central, they compete with the Blues and the Hawks to win it.
Look, we know very well that there's five outstanding teams in the Western Conference. Yes. And none of us would be surprised if any of those five teams the Kings, the Sharks, the Ducks, the Blues, the Blackhawks ended up actually representing the West in the Stanley Cup Finals.
That's fair.
So, yeah. You know, we say that they're in third in the Pacific, but, you know, we could get 50 people together in a room and say, which of those three teams is your favorite? And you might get 17 for the Ducks, 17 for the Sharks, and 16 people saying the Kings. So, you know, the standings are almost irrelevant, except for the fact that they're going to be involved in a first-round matchup that's going to be an absolute battle, as opposed to whoever wins the division, who's going to have a much easier matchup against a Minnesota Wild team or a Phoenix Coyote team.
Or Dallas.
Or Dallas. That's simply not as talented as those teams.
That's right.
You mentioned the back-to-backs, and, you know, people say, well, you know, what happens if they struggle as they're entering the playoffs and everything else? Daryl Sutter knows this team. He knows they're a veteran team. We've seen it for the last number of years that they go through the regular season sort of middling, you know, not really, you know, put a foot on the pedal, you know, pedal on the gas, that sort of thing. They can turn it on when it comes.
Well, I mean, they went to the Cup, and they went to the conference finals. Now, last year, they were a little bit tired in the conference finals, and to our point, you play St. Louis and San Jose, you're going to be pretty tired.
And, Richie, the last 2 weeks of the regular season, and I don't have the stats to back this up, have very little as far as predicting what's going to happen in the playoffs.
You're right. No, they really do.
The stats
run does not mean you're going to suddenly be successful.
If you're thinking the team, you know, that wins five games in a row has some type of advantage,
you're right.
It's a completely different season. And maybe we can find something that. Maybe we can get Remus to find something.
No, but I read it.
I know that it's a fact, Richie. It's just I don't have the numbers to back it up. But I know that it definitely doesn't hurt to be going strong into the playoffs. But I'm just saying, it's a whole different season.
It's not a do or die situation. Yeah. Before we go to break, you want another reason why you should sit some of your guys? Matt Duchene leaves the game today for the Colorado Avalanche with a knee injury. Will not return. Status up in the air.
You make a good point. It is a little bit early. Wouldn't you say it's a bit early to start resting your guys? I mean, there's still eight games left.
You don't play back-to-back, so I still don't think you make them go through the wear and tear.
Like, I can see you
and
doing
all those
that
back-to-backs, both those were travel, right?
One of them was at home, then
you're still
going
traveling.
On the road. Yeah.
Both, they're traveling, so...
Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus back to the Winnipeg Jets. We'll look at the AHL system and some of the junior players for the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. Some good baseball analysis in the break. Getting ready for the fantasy draft tomorrow, of course.
That game, I got to say, and they were playing the H&L interview with Michael Farber from Montreal.
Yeah.
That game yesterday, it really was an exhibition game. It didn't mean anything. It was nice that the Jays won. Yeah. But just to see baseball, I tweeted that. It brings back so many memories of watching Marquise Grissom, Delino DeShields, John Wetland, Moises Alou, all these great old Expo players. I don't know. I used to be probably more of an Expos fan than I was a Jays fan. I like both teams. I now cheer for the Jays, of course. But it was just great. I mean, I was surprised that, you know, the roof didn't cave in yesterday at Olympic Stadium watching that game.
The roof caves in at Olympic Stadium on its own. It doesn't need anybody's help to do that. I think they're still paying it off from the Olympics. But anyways, that's
the tribute to Gary Carter, all that was just awesome.
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah. Obviously, want to as we mentioned before, we headed to break before, we wanted to talk about some of the Winnipeg Jets prospects, guys who are playing either in the AHL in a couple instances, Adam Lowry, Brendan Kitchen, J.C. Lapon, and some of the guys who are playing still in junior. Obviously, the names that first come to mind are Josh Morrissey, the pick from last year, Nick Petan, who's absolutely tearing it up with the Portland Winterhawks again.
Yep.
You know, there's Connor Hellebuck, who I saw a great tweet earlier today that said he's got more shutouts in his college career than he does have losses.
Yep.
Really?
Which is really tremendous.
There's an interesting graphic. We'll maybe get Remus to tweet that out from the Illegal Curve account. I saw that too. It was a great graphic. I think, Drew, the reason we wanted to do this, because we were talking about this Wednesday on the midweek show, the Jets have a lot of good prospects right now. And I would give the Jets management and scouting staff really an A mark for the way they've drafted. And if you look at the first round picks, I really like. And even, sure, there have been some picks that haven't worked out. Zach Ewan, whatever, he just decided he didn't want to be a Winnipeg Jet. But what I'm saying is I think the last 3 years, because that's what we have to judge them on, we can't really judge them on what the Atlanta Thrashers did. They have some good prospects. The Hockey News ranked the Jets prospects 8th. And you can take that with a grain of salt. That doesn't mean that the Jets necessarily have the 8th, but I'm saying the Jets have probably top 10, top 15 prospects. They're doing well right now. Now, I think what Richie mentioned is we don't really know how these guys are going to turn out next year, 2 years, even 4 or 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So the reason why we wanted to talk about this is to just maybe really give the listeners an idea of what's likely for them to come in the next 1 or 2 years. And we should mention the Jets have signed Josh Morrissey to the St. John's Icecaps. They did that on Thursday. So that means that he'll join the team
after his junior season ended when his team was eliminated in the first round of the WHL playoffs.
Prince Albert Raiders, coached by Davey Manson, were eliminated.
Are you allowed to call him Davey?
Well, we had him on the show.
Yeah, we did.
So he's a friend of the show.
He is a friend of the
show. Used to love Manson.
Go for his old trade?
Yeah.
Boris Mirnov?
You can call me Ezzy. It's all good.
Boris Mirnov, Mats Lindgren, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what? We should make it every segment.
Every time we mention an old player, we have to a trade.
Yeah, why not?
It's nostalgic. It's Expos. Yeah. There's an Expos game.
That's right.
Well, not an Expos game, a Jays-Mets game in the Olympic Stadium, but it's a nostalgic show here today. But we wanted to look at these prospects.
We're
going to
start talking about Kirk McCaskill now that we're talking about baseball and hockey.
Yeah, Todd Van Poppel.
Oh, no, Kirk McCaskill was a two-sport athlete, though.
He was. So was Bo Jackson.
Not hockey.
Thanks,
Kirk
thanks,
McCaskill
Jesse.
Played hockey.
That's true. But when I look at these prospects, I think that even though there's a good group here, I'm curious to see if any one of these guys gets a shot with the Jets, a serious shot. And when you look at the roster right now,
and
the rookie roster, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about what are the Jets going to do in the offseason if guys like Jokinen, Setoguchi, other players don't come back. Maybe a defenseman doesn't come back. Does a guy like Brendan Kitchen get a chance with the Jets, or do they keep him in the AHL? Now, if you follow the lead of the Detroit Red Wings and how well they're doing with their prospects, Grand Rapids Griffins guys coming up, you'd probably want to keep these guys in the AHL for 1-2 more years, but that's the issue here. To me, this is all about player development, and it's good that we're having Nelson Emerson on, even though he works for the Kings.
Yeah.
This is really what this is all about. How do you manage these prospects? The Jets, for example, Richie, they have a goaltending problem. Hellebuck?
It's a good problem
Eric Comrie, who's a top-rated prospect, and even if you look back, Jason Kasdorf, the guy they drafted in 2011, probably the least heralded draft pick. But you look at the goalies they have here. Hellebuck, I mean, this guy looks really good. So
but
do
the
you,
problem,
give,
again,
you give him a chance in the
AHL
first?
What do we know about this guy? We don't know anything about him.
That's what I'm saying, right? So I'm interested.
Chris Peters comes on last week. We had him on USA Hockey, and he says, you know, from the USA Hockey blog, he says he's looked great.
Yep.
And he might. But who knows?
How does that translate?
How does
that translate?
I don't know anything about him.
That's the age-old question. Are these guys going to be able to translate their junior success, their college success, to the AHL and to the NHL? And that's why I think you are going to see one or two of these guys. I mean, you were talking fourth-line guys. Tangrady, do you give Adam Lowry a chance? Adam Lowry, I don't think his ceiling in the NHL is a 90-point player. But his bloodlines are good, and I think he could probably be a pretty good crash and banger in the NHL, so maybe they give him a chance. I think it's just interesting to see what do they do, because we can look at this list, and there's a good solid list of 10 names, but what happens a year, 2 years, 3 years from now with these guys?
I think for this coming season, or next season, as the case is, I think you'll be able to decipher what their plans are, largely on what they do in the offseason in terms of signings.
Right.
They'd never signed a second-line player, so we knew that the team had penciled in Mark Scheifele as the second-line center. If they don't go out and sign a third-line center, if Olli Jokinen doesn't come back or they don't replace Olli Jokinen with another center, we know that, hey, the organization feels either Eric O'Dell or Adam Lowry can step in and play that role. So you can get an idea for what they think of the development of their prospects by what they do with the free agency
market or in
trades. If they think that their prospects aren't ready, they'll go out and they will sign somebody as a bridge, maybe. If they go out and get somebody who's a third line center and then they sign them for 3 years, well then whoa, maybe there's a problem with one of these guys in their development and that maybe their ceiling isn't third line center. Maybe their ceiling is career AHLer or fourth line center.
Theory and practice. I mean, all you hear is preaching development, AHL, and then they sometimes have to rush guys through because in practice they got nobody. So, I mean, it's easy to say things and different to do them.
Right, and I think, Richie, that this is a good problem for the Jets management that they didn't have 2 years ago. So when they signed a guy like Olli Jokinen, they didn't have this 2 years ago. They didn't have all of these prospects. And you could say that a lot of these guys are 1 or 2 years away. Nick Batan's already signed an entry-level deal. I would guess that he's probably going to play in the AHL first and not go right to the NHL because a guy like Jacob Trouba coming into the NHL playing big-time minutes, that is not the norm.
Exception rather than the rule.
That is the exception. Mark Scheifele, he had to play two more years in junior until... And so I think they've done a good job with developing their prospects, and that's why the question is being raised. Which one of these guys is going to get a serious look? A lot of it has to do with how they perform in training camp. Because you go, I always go back to a guy like Olli Määttä. And Olli Määttä right now, we talked about this, Pittsburgh Penguins, second place in the East. He's arguably their best defenseman, maybe their second or third best defenseman. Yeah. Wasn't supposed to make the team. I'm just saying, I'm not saying that that's going to happen with one of these guys. I'm just saying that it could happen.
But let me ask you, I know this is, we're going back to training camp, but do you get the impression during the last training camp that there were any jobs to be won there?
Well, that's the point. You want internal competition. It makes the team better, for
sure.
But
did you get the impression that players who impressed, like there were some prospects who had a good training camp.
When you give Adam Pardy a one-way deal, then you're taking away competition somewhat.
Sure. Right? You're telling some of the younger guys, we don't think that you're ready yet, and we're not going to, we're not going to even begin to entertain the thought that you might be ready. To me, the training camp last year was, okay, you looked good, but none of you are even in our thought process as looking good enough to step in ahead of any of these other players.
Right. Everybody knew Trouba was going to play. I think the big guy to me is Josh Morrissey. And everything that we've heard about Josh Morrissey is that he's an excellent two-way player. Different in that he's not as big as Trouba, and he's not maybe as nasty, but he does have a physical element to his game. So he's a guy that I think could take a spot in the defense. Now, it's really difficult to say. It can't be in the top four.
No, it can't be in the top four.
So if it is, then you're looking
so
to match.
Where? So where's he playing?
It's got to be a third pairing guy or an extra.
So that's Stewart.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Unless you're mad.
Stewart can play the right side if you want him to, but then, okay, so what are you doing with Postma? I mean, he's under contract. Redmond's probably not in the plans here. And then the other guys, when you talk about Kitchen, what happens with him and what do they need on the right side? And they need a top four guy, and they don't have one right now. Yep. You can't ask Morrissey to do that.
No.
And can you have Morrissey? I don't know anything about Morrissey, so I'm just talking. But
I
don't know anything about him.
We don't watch him as much, but we've seen him play a little bit at the junior level. We've had guys on to talk about him.
But
I know what you're saying. We don't know his game as intimately as we do Bogosian or Trouba's, but I think
he's smaller.
I agree, have him
and Enstrom on the same Tula on the left side.
I agree with you, Richie. Though I do think, and again, this is just me personally speaking because I don't think anybody knows at this point. He has signed an entry level deal. I think there's a good chance he plays a year in St. John's.
Well, can he play? I thought he's at age 20 still. He's got to play another year in WHL.
Yeah, because he was only drafted last year.
Depends on your birthday, I believe.
Oh, he does. That's right. He can play in the playoffs. That's wrong. I'm wrong. So he could go back to junior.
Right, yeah, that's the exception that they have. But the exception that they have.
I apologize, that was wrong.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if it's based on birthday. But another thing that's a factor here is, like, for example, you look at like Nick Patan. Again, don't know anything about the guy. I've met him. Presents as a confident young man.
Big points.
Okay. It puts up great points. But when's the last time you saw a guy? He's listed as 5'9". I don't even know if he's 5'9".
No, he's probably more like 5'8".
When was the last time you saw a 5'8", and he's played center? When was the last time you saw a 5'8 centerman in the National Hockey League?
Can't think of one.
There aren't a lot. And for a guy like him, again, you'd have to think that because of his size, and not just his size, because of not even the transition, they're not going to put guys in positions to fail. They want to put them in positions where they're going to succeed. So that would mean that, again, a guy like Patan might have to play in the AHL. So
he might have to play wing, is what I'm saying.
Right, or exactly. He might have to play wing.
So does that change your projection that way? I don't know what he's going to be again. I don't know anything about the guy in terms of seeing him play. A period or two at the juniors I was able to see. But can you play center? So, I mean, there are factors here. The guys, when they play positions in the defense, in the minors and juniors, doesn't mean they'll play that here.
And I'm sure if that's the difference between him becoming an NHL or not, he'll play wing.
Oh, he'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Do whatever it takes to get to the show. But thank you for your point. 5'9 centermen aren't a dime a dozen.
I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm just saying I haven't seen one do it in a long time. Yeah. When was the last time you saw a 5? Some of the Hab guys are pretty small.
Yeah, even like a guy like Tyler Johnson is really small, but there aren't a lot.
There's not many. I mean, there's a couple, but there aren't many. I mean, especially when you're lined up against the... let's look at the division for a second.
Even a guy like Brian Little is very small for a centerman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's 5'10". Yeah. 5'11".
It's tough to defend as well.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
You have to protect those players.
Look at the Oilers up the middle. We talked about it on Thursday. Wednesday? We were Wednesday this
Wednesday.
Wednesday this
it was Wednesday.
We were on Wednesday. We talked about it on Wednesday. You watch them defend in their own zone with the centers. You can't do it.
Yeah. Well, they're too small.
And we know he's an eager guy, Patan. You know he's rugged. But again, there's limitations to these things. So it doesn't mean he's not going to be good. But we don't know. That's and I'm tell you something. Most people don't know.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about a guy who's 6'5" and he's playing like he's 8 feet tall. Blake Wheeler. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I tell you what, boys. They should the outtakes of the show or the in-between segments of the show. You know, would really make for a show themselves.
Well, basically, the breaks of this show involved the three of us arguing like a bunch of babas.
Which is very similar to the regular show.
Very, very well done, Ezzy. Baba O'Reilly playing here. Well
nice.
Done.
I didn't even know. I'm going to be honest. I'd like to take credit for that. I'm not smart enough to take credit for that. That's why Richie is a lawyer and got into law school, and I got a 147 on the LSAT. Timmy, though, for the people that haven't met Timmy, great guy, Timmy. He just sits there.
Producer.
He sits there and he looks at us and he's like, and Tim's been doing the show since we've been on the station, and it's us yammering on, and Tim just sits there and
takes it all in.
Often I say to Tim, I'm like, how nuts are we? Like, how crazy do you think we are? And Tim's always a nice guy and says, oh, no, you guys are cool. But really, he thinks we're nuts.
I can't really blame him, to be perfectly honest. Blake Wheeler, we saw the performance on Thursday against the San Jose Sharks, a goal, 2 assists. We saw the performance against the Dallas Stars 10 days ago, however, when 2 weeks ago now, I guess, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, you know, 4 assists. We've seen his performance really in the last 20, 30 games. He's got, I think I saw 32 points in the last 30 games. Maybe it's 31 points, a little more than a point a game.
Yep.
Obviously, he's been the best Winnipeg Jet over the last, you know, 30 games. What's his ceiling? Is he, does he have point per game potential over an 82-game season?
I think he does. And you look at Blake Wheeler at his age right now, right? And he's going to set career highs because his previous high was his first year with the Jets, 64 points. So he's only a couple of points off. With 8 games left, you'd have, and you mentioned, Drew, he's a point per game player in the second half of the season. So you'd have to think that he's going to finish somewhere between 68, 72 points. Regardless, he's having a great year. And the thing that I love the most about Blake Wheeler over this last little stretch, Richie mentioned it, these games have very little significance when you factor in that the Jets are not making the playoffs this year. It just isn't going to happen. And I know that I'm the most optimistic guy here on the show, and I picked the Jets to make the playoffs. But when you look at the stats, 0.02% chance, I mean, that's what the chances are. They're zero. And that, it just, it's no, you know what I mean? So it's too late for us to start saying, oh, you know, these games matter. But these games do matter to me looking ahead to next year. And Blake Wheeler, that really scary incident, and Paul Maurice said that in the coaches' summit, he even said there was an incident that he saw in Carolina with Glenn Wesley.
You're talking about him falling into the open door on Monday in Dallas.
It's very scary, and I tweeted this. You got to close that bench. I mean, the Dallas Stars, and again, I know that they did a great job with the Rich Peverly incident, but that's just one of those things. I mean, God, he could get, you're talking torn abdomen, rib problems. Like, that was scary, and I don't want to blame anybody. I'm just saying that was really scary. But the point I'm trying to make is him coming back into that game, because we were kind of looking at it and saying, okay, you know, Wheeler looks really, like, I mean, he looked like he was in a lot of pain. He came back. And that meant a lot to his teammates. Paul Maurice even said that. But the way he played against San Jose, and you guys could disagree, when you have guys like Joe Pavelski, who Rich and I argued about this, I think he's a Hart candidate this year. Love Joe Pavelski's game.
But you said that on Wednesday's show.
Yep. Thornton, Marlowe, Couture was back, Boyle, Vlasic, all these guys. I thought Blake Wheeler was the best player on the ice for both teams. I really did. I thought he took over that game, and he had that kind of, that Mark Messier fire in his eyes. And he hasn't done that every game. Don't get me wrong. He has his slumps, and he a lot of the time it's guys like Ladd, Little, and Byfuglien. But for the most part, he is the guy that generates offense for this team. So I think he can even better, put up 80 points. And I think, again, I wanted to bring this up too. I think next year, especially if Jokinen's not back, I think he should have an A on his chest for sure. He's shown me a lot of leadership qualities this year.
Why does Jokinen have an A?
You're missing the
point. He doesn't have an A in his name, so I don't.
Like, what happened? Like, what happened in the shuffle? Like, where was the A? Like, was it sewn on the wrong jersey? Like, did you guys, for a second here, let me go on a quick rant.
Ring the bell.
What's Olli Jokinen trying to drop pass when there's an empty net?
I saw that.
With a minute left in the game. Do you guys remember against Anaheim when he fired a puck blindly in the front of the net too? When the Jets were up one late in January? Whenever it was? I don't know how that guy's got an A.
When you look,
with due respect,
right? And you look going forward to this team. Mark Stewart signed a 4-year contract.
Yeah.
Love it, Stewart. I said this on Twitter as well. I'm referencing Twitter a lot. I guess that means I'm on Twitter a lot.
You're on Twitter a lot.
You could shoot 50 pucks at Mark Stewart and knock him down. He's still going to get up. I bet you guys saw that. Mark Stewart. That's what he does.
Yeah, he's tough as nails.
He'll do whatever he needs to do.
He deserves an A.
He's not going to score goals. He deserves an A. Andrew Ladd. He's a captain. I don't think anybody's going to question that he deserves the C on his chest. He's been the only captain the Jets 2.0 have had.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at the other guys that form the leadership group, I think we'd agree that Evander Kane's not a guy that's a leader of this team. No offense to him. He just isn't. But then you're talking about guys like Blake Wheeler. You're talking about, I would say, even at 20 years old, Jacob Trouba.
Maybe Trouba over Bogosian. But you're not going to make Trouba an A this young. So no. Bogosian, no. Enstrom, no. Kane, no. Bufflin, no.
I think it's Wheeler.
I think it's Wheeler too.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. I think it's a pretty easy decision because this team lacks leadership. So I don't know if I'm saying it's Wheeler because of what he's done, although he certainly played really well, or if it's because they just don't have any leaders.
Richie,
well,
I think he's taking on
more of a leadership.
Yeah, no, I think some credit should be due to him, and some should be the fact that this team lacks leadership.
You know, there was a void for him to fill.
Exactly.
But a lot of guys, you just mentioned all the guys who aren't going to wear the A, that they haven't been able to fill that leadership void. Maybe it's not in their personality. That's often the case. You know, it's not necessarily a criticism if you aren't a leader. Some people are.
It's not a criticism of the players themselves at some level, but it's a criticism of the organization as a whole if they continue to go forward with this lack of leadership.
Fine, but you know, it is refreshing, or it is nice to see a younger player improving and developing into a different player right before your eyes.
Right. Absolutely.
And Wheeler's 27 years old now, so this isn't his first 3 or 4 years in the league. But I know, you know, we listen to, and I know Dave Minuchin of A Legal Curve listens to more audio than anybody. Remus probably is up there too. There was a quote by Blake Wheeler after that game. And Dennis Bayak asked him the question. Dennis and Shane asked him the question. I know a lot of the answers usually you don't make much of. But he said that he's grown up a lot since he's had a kid.
Yeah.
And I really think, I really thought he was being honest there. And he was kind of almost saying like, yeah, I think I have changed and I think I have matured. And I know that, you know, some people will think that wasn't a big deal. But I really thought that him saying that really meant a lot, because I do see a change in Blake Wheeler. I think he has matured. I don't think he's all the way there. I think sometimes he gets a little bit too emotional in games.
He does get too emotional. I agree.
He gets too emotional.
But I like that he's emotional.
Right.
Like sometimes he's too emotional, but I'd rather him be too emotional like he is than not emotional at all.
Hockey is an emotional game.
Yeah.
It really is. And sometimes the teams that are willing to sacrifice their bodies and do whatever it takes to win will beat the teams that have more skill. Look at all those years the Leafs beat the Senators in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Senators had more talented teams. So, I mean, I'm just saying that I think Blake Wheeler, you can't say enough about what he's done. I took it to Twitter and I said, is he the team MVP? Most people said it was either him or Little, and most people were saying Wheeler.
Little.
I think it's Wheeler. I mean.
It's Wheeler, Trouba.
Yeah, Trouba is.
Those two.
Yeah, those are the guys I would say.
It's not an extensive list this year.
Well, Ladd's also been very good.
Ladd's been good, yeah.
Ladd's been good. But, I mean, in terms of guys
who've
taken
really
the next
good.
Step, I think for a lot of Jets fans, if Kane is still here, you know, after the summer and everything else, a top line of Kane, Scheifele, and Wheeler is a very tantalizing prospect for a lot of people.
Right, and Ladd, Little, Frolik works great too. I don't think you
need
can break
get,
that
need,
up.
Need to add another. You need to add another top six guy. Frolik isn't a top six winger. If you want to play him with those guys, I can see that.
It shouldn't be a permanent thing.
You need another top six guy.
Right, but in terms of for next season, if you're going to fill a gap for next year, I think it's your third line. Top six guy, and you can bump Frolik down if you want.
It's so hard to find a top six guy. Well, that's a challenge that the GM's going to have to handle.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Nelson Emerson is scheduled to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Los Angeles Kings Player Personnel Department, and of course, a former Winnipeg Jets player from version 1.0, Nelson Emerson. Nelson, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Good, thanks.
That's good. Nelson, we'll get to you, the Winnipeg Jets, a little bit later on in the interview, but we want to start, obviously, with your role with the LA Kings. Right now, you're in player personnel with the team, but prior to entering player personnel, you were an assistant coach for a couple of years. What's the main difference in your day-to-day activities from an assistant coach versus a player personnel role?
You know, guys have changed quite a bit. When I was assistant coach, the head coach was Mark Crawford. And obviously, you know, the job as assistant coach is, you know, you're there and you're with the team daily, and you're, you know, preparing for the game, and you're watching who you're going to play against. You're watching your own team, you know, day by day. It's you're kind of making sure that you have everything covered in power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5 situations, that type of thing. And you know, and then when I moved into the player development situation, it's more. You know, once we've drafted players and players become our property with the LA Kings, they're still playing junior hockey or playing college hockey. And, you know, that's my job and the other guys that are working with us is role to follow those players and to try and get to know them and help them become pros, really, so that when they become LA Kings, they have a little bit of a head start.
You look at some of the young guys, Nelson, that you have, and they're having a hard time cracking the lineup because of the depth. But specifically, Tyler Toffoli, you know, Tanner Pearson, and Lyndon Vey. What are your expectations for these three players, respectively?
You know what, guys, they're outstanding players, and they've kind of done it the way we like here in LA. They've been drafted by us, and we're out actually obviously really good junior players, and you know, it's tough to play in the NHL, really, and it takes time and grooming, and all these players have been down in the minors and kind of learned their craft down there, and you know, they've been good players in the American Hockey League, and that's why we like it. They've gone down there, they've done what we've asked, they've you know, been on the bus, they've played 3 games in 3 nights, they've, you know, they're very young players, but they're playing against older guys and just learning how to be a pro. And, you know, they spent, you know, two years down there. Each one's a little different. But, you know, then when they come up to L.A., you know what I mean, they're ready to play. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of learned how we do things in our organization. And I don't think it's we don't have to rush them. Now they get here and they're able to fit in.
Nelson, before you came on the show earlier in the show, we were looking at some of the Winnipeg Jets prospects, some of which are in the AHL, but a lot of guys that are still playing junior, Nick Batan, Josh Morrissey, and we were talking about how far these guys are away from becoming members of the Winnipeg Jets. With such impressive depth in the Kings organization, how do you prevent young players from getting frustrated when they feel that they're hitting that glass ceiling and aren't able to take that next step from AHL to NHL?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how close those young players are for the Jets, but it's tough, and it's a tough hill to climb, really. But you know what? Once you're in the system and they have your hands on you, then you know what I mean. Then you start preparing yourself to be a professional, and you gotta do your work, and you gotta go through the process. Work with Mike O'Connell up here, and he called it, you gotta tie the knots. And what he means by that is, I mean, it's not going to happen automatically. I mean, they're not just going to hand you a role in the NHL. But whether you're playing junior, whether playing college, or you sign and then you go to the American League, I mean, you have to go through the process. And that takes in the summer doing the right things. That takes during the season playing the right way, playing the system, doing all the little things, making sure you get your board work done and being strong on pucks and winning battles. And But the main thing is, I think you're growing up and you're learning how to be a pro, and you know what, it's tough, and there's no perfect way to tell a guy to do it, but there is a way that you have to tell them to make sure they do the correct things.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Nelson Emerson. He's got a role with the LA Kings Player Personnel Department. Nelson, you've obviously mentioned, you know, you're an assistant coach under Mark Crawford. You've been in the organization for a number of years now. You know, to your mind, what's the main differences between how Daryl Sutter handles young players as compared to his predecessor, Terry Murray?
You know, that's I think that the one thing that with you know, Terry, he relied a lot you know, on the team and the older players, and we played very defensively, and we were one of the top teams in the league, you know, obviously playing that way, and we played very controlled. Now with Daryl, I mean, he sees we play a very pressure-oriented system, and he expects all our players to play that way. And, you know, you have to be on your toes, and you got to be playing hard, and you got to be playing fast. But he also wants you to play with possession, meaning you have to make smart plays with the puck. You got to hold on to the puck and possess the puck. And he wants you and demands you to make plays. And a young player in this system, you have to be ready every night and every shift. And, you know, you can't make a mistake, and you got to make sure that when you're out there, you're focused, you're engaged, you're playing your toes, and, you know, you're an athletic player.
Now, so when you talk about development, obviously, you were mentioning before coming through college or junior, and you played college yourself. How do the players compare nowadays? What's the differences between guys coming out of college and guys coming out of junior in terms of their development and your role in that?
Well, you know, it's that's a fair question, and there is a difference in some of the players. Probably, if you look at, you know, a player that's playing in the Western League, sometimes these kids are, you know, they're ready to turn pro, and you've had them for 2 years, and they're 19 years old, and all of a sudden they've signed a contract, and, mm-hmm. you know, they're ready to either come with your big club, or they're going to, you know, usually they are going to play in the minors. So, you know what, basically they're still teenagers. And, you know, if you're working with teenagers, and we all know how they are, you know, they're still young people. And, you know, they're just trying to grow up in life, and all of a sudden you're throwing this pro mentality on them. So, you know, that's a lot to ask. Whereas a college kid, you know, it's a little different because they've maybe been away at college. They've been living on their own. They might be a little older. They might be 22 years old, some maybe 23. And they might be just a little bit more mature physically and mentally. So I think when you start dealing with these kids that way, you have to understand the difference too. I mean, one's 19, one's 23. So we all know that that is a big difference mm-hmm. in life. And you know, we have to kind of act accordingly with that.
Nelson, Ron Hextall left the Los Angeles Kings organization, went back to the Philadelphia Flyers. Rob Blake came in as the assistant GM. How has the front office changed since the departure of Hextall?
Well, I mean, I think it's been pretty, you know, the change has been pretty easy. And, I mean, Hexy was a great guy, and he was very easygoing, and he was fun to be around. And obviously, you know, when it was game time, he was very serious, and obviously he's emotional, but not so much that way you would think. He was a great guy to work with and very smart, and the way he would kind of read things, and he knew about the players, and he knew all the players and kind of what they were going through and things like that. And now with Rob, I mean, it's been a short time since he started, but, you know, he's very slim, has a lot of similar traits that Hexy had. Players that played, a little bit of old school in them, both of them, but also, you know, smart enough, both of them are, to understand the new wave of player. And I think that's interesting because you see a lot of similarities in Hexy and Blakey, but one thing about Rob, too, is, you know, this is all new to him, and he was kind of put in this position, and it's a great experience for him, and he's kind of getting his feet wet, but he's been great. He's been awesome. I think he loves his job. He's in charge of our minor league team in there in Manchester, and the Manchester team has had a terrific year. So, so far, so good for Rob, for sure.
And you played college with Rob, didn't you, Nelson?
We played college at Bowling Green in Ohio. We were actually roommates there, and we're from the same hometown back in Ontario too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a small world. You know, Rob Blake just recently named a GM of the Team Canada World Championships. Kind of seems like he's taking a similar course to Steve Yzerman. Is that something that maybe he'd be interested in down the road?
I haven't asked him, but I mean, you know what? Every Canadian person, and you guys are probably the mm-hmm. same way. How about, like, when the Olympics come out 2 years before, you're on your own, you're sitting on a plane, you know, trying to act like you're the GM and put together a roster like every Canadian does, and, you know, everyone has a comment to say or is critical of everything that happens. And I couldn't imagine any Canadian, and Rob would be the same way. It would be an honor for him to work for his country and to be in charge of a team like that. But now I'm only putting words in his mouth, but I couldn't imagine. I imagine he'd be very excited about a possibility like that.
Nelson, we'll let you go on this two-part question. And in the last, you know, 24 hours or so since we, you know, tweeted out that you're going to be on the program, we've been inundated with comments and people saying you have to ask him about October 17th.
I know it is.
Yeah. Nelson knows it's coming.
You knew it was coming, I'm sure, as soon as you got the interview
Daryl
request.
Daryl Sutter was the coach.
Yeah. You know, can you take us back through that play? And you know, how stunned were you when they, after video review, they still granted you that game-winning overtime goal against the Blackhawks, even though you it just, you know, I don't want to say it, you threw it in the net. It just sort of happened to deflect out of your glove into the net past Ed Belfour.
Well, I tossed it onto the back of his in there, hoping something like that could happen. But I'm sitting in the, I remember sitting in the locker room beside Keith Tkachuk, because we went, they counted the goal, then we went off, and the Hawks were going crazy, still on the ice going crazy. But we were sitting in the locker room, and I was with Keith Tkachuk, and I just looked over and said, if they count this a goal, oh my gosh, it's going to be crazy. But I remember sitting there with Keith, I'll never forget that, and the fact that it counted is just, it's remarkable. And nowadays, when I see calls made in the NHL, and I just shake my head and wonder, how can that be a hooking penalty? That's the guy's got one hand on a stick, and he's giving a guy a penalty shot or something like that. And remember in Detroit, our team, the Kings this year, the puck went off the net behind the goalie. Yeah. And, you know, they didn't see that. But, hey, you know what? Things happen. And when things like that happen, I always remember back to that goal in Winnipeg.
Second part of the question, Nelson. The Jets playing in Staples Center tonight will be their final, the final round, you know, around the league. This is the last team they haven't yet played in that arena. Just for you, you know, having played in Winnipeg and now seeing the Jets back in the league, what are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I wanted to, you know, at least finish with that. And you know what? When I played in Winnipeg, it was, people asked me, and it was actually a remarkable time in my career. And then the neatest thing about it is we were all young. I mean, I got traded from St. Louis to Winnipeg, and then you have Tkachuk there, and Solani there, and Zamnov, and Tooman, it was just awesome. I mean, to be young and to live in that city, and I just remember being able to, you know, share those young years with my teammates, and we were good and we were fast. Mm-hmm. It was a great place to live, and the restaurants were excellent, the people and the fans. It was awesome. So I think everyone's really excited that the team's back in the league. I think they got a fast team. I think they're fun to watch. I think it's a very, very tough building to play in, and you know what? They got a nice team, and it'll be a tough game for us tonight.
Yeah, and you had your career best year in Winnipeg.
Well, I did. I mean, it's the players I just named. You know, that's why.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's watching Solani score all those goals, and I just sit there back in the weeds, and I'm playing with Keith Tkachuk and Steiner and or whoever it is, and it was pretty easy. So it was a lot of fun.
Nelson Emerson is in the Los Angeles Kings player personnel department. He's, of course, a former Winnipeg Jet from version 1.0. Nelson, thanks very much for doing this, and thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, but I got one. So all those players I named, and Teppel Newman, and we did a show down there one day for, I don't think, so got to rent for a car to use for a year, and Teppel Newman won the showdown. All those players. It was Teppel.
Underrated.
I know. There you go.
Nelson, thanks very much. Enjoy the game tonight.
That's awesome.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Nelson Emerson for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, he is, of course, with the LA Kings player personnel department. You remember him as a Winnipeg Jets player. In case you missed any of the interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. It'll be available on illegalcurve.com, and we're going to put it up on tsn1290.ca. Best part is that he knew that question was coming.
Of course, and yeah. You know what? Nice thing to say about Winnipeg. You always like to hear that.
Yeah. He was a fan favorite, and he was being modest.
Good skater.
Because he was playing, skater. But 73 points that year.
Yeah,
I think he had 30 goals, too, that year. I was checking his stats earlier. I knew that it was one of his best years, because he ended up playing for, I think it was 7 or 8 team NHL teams. But as Richie mentioned, really fast skater.
Yeah, good skater.
And unfortunately, he wasn't able to stay with the Jets for a couple more years. But he was a fan favorite and a really good interview. I was just thinking, you look at Nelson Emerson with the LA Kings. He was an assistant coach before. You look at the group they have there with Dean Lombardi,
yes.
Rob Blake,
absolutely.
Luke Robitaille. It's a pretty good management group there.
It's a very knowledgeable group, and Dean Lombardi was. I was thinking about that today. Dean Lombardi is one of the best general managers in the National Hockey League. He probably is in the top five if you think about it, guys. With what he's done in San Jose and what he's done in Los Angeles, a patient approach yet aggressive when he ought to be, very, very polished. And the guys he's put through, you know, Hextall leaves, you got Blake there, And if you listen to Nelson Emerson, excuse me, it sure sounds like Rob Blake is going to be a guy who takes that next step eventually. And where that will be an interesting question, because if the Kings are smart, and by all accounts they are, Dean Lombardi is going nowhere.
And right? The really successful GMs, Richie, I agree with you, are the ones that make their teams contenders year after year. You look at the Chicago Blackhawks, they're going to be contenders year after year. San Jose Sharks, where he came from, year after year, they're contenders. Boston Bruins, Pittsburgh Penguins. These teams are set up to succeed year after year. So they've done a great job there.
Want to get to our UFA of the Week segment. Obviously, a new segment that we've introduced on this show and on Wednesday's show for the next couple of weeks regarding the upcoming unrestricted free agents, so we can get you ready for July 1st when all these guys hit the market and become available. Today, we're going to focus on Mike Camilleri of the Calgary Flames.
Drafted by the Kings, Drew. You didn't segue that.
Sorry, that's right. Drafted
well,
by
Drew
the
was
Kings.
Drove a segue here, so he was all segued out.
That's true. I was just awfully tired. I'm going to take a nap. Old guy like me driving a Segway, it doesn't look that good. Mike Camilleri, he's coming to the end of a 5-year, $30 million contract with the Calgary Flames.
He scored again last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy, he's got 25 goals now, and he's missed some games this year.
Yeah.
If he was healthy and on a good team, you'd have to think he'd have a chance at 40 goals.
And you know, Brian Burke held tight to tough on trading him for what he deemed to be not market value, and you can certainly criticize Brian Burke for that, because something's better than nothing, and they were out of it at that point, although he did get a second-round pick for Rito Barra. Is that the one he traded?
Yeah.
And you can't
mix up him and Ramo.
We can't not mention, Richie, that it was public knowledge that Burke did offer Camilleri a contract. So did that factor into it?
I mean, yeah, we'll see. But you just look at some of these teams out there and you wonder, maybe they undervalued Mike Camilleri. And let's talk about Camilleri's skill set, because he's going to be a pending UFA.
Yeah. He'll be 32 a month before free agency.
Mm-hmm. He can score goals. Mm-hmm. And how many guys in the National Hockey League can score goals anymore?
Not just score goals. Pure sniper. Like Vanek and Camilleri and, well, Stastny is more of a playmaker, but like pure snipers. He's just a pure sniper.
He finds open ice well. And I got to tell you something. You watch him more and more, he's a better passer than I had originally thought and gave him credit for. He is a bona fide top six player, can play on your top line if you need him to, can score, can play power play. He's a guy who will probably get some good value for. Now, the question is the market for him? He's going to be a UFA. I can tell you, most teams need a guy who can score 25 to 30 goals in the National Hockey League. What will he demand? That's a good question. What will he be a guy he'll probably ask for more than 3 years, but I assume he'll probably get 3 years. The question is then, what does he get paid? And you have to think he's going to get probably 3 years, $15 million, something like that. Because at the end of the day, to win, you need to score goals. Mm-hmm. And he can do that. And you watch him, he does it with relative ease at times.
You could make a strong argument, I should say, that Camilleri might be offered 4 years and a little bit more money, 5 years for a team that really wants him. You mentioned power play.
But nobody would trade a top guy for, so you have to wonder what the value is for
him. That's true. But maybe things have changed with his little goal scoring spree here at the end of the year. But look at the power play goals.
Yep,
in his first year with Calgary, and that was his career year, 82 points with the Calgary Flames. That was 2008-2009. He had 19 power play goals. And this is a guy that this year has 6 power play goals. This is a guy that is one of the most dangerous, still, even at 32 years old, is extremely, and you put him with a playmaker, because let's be honest, the Calgary Flames don't have a lot of guys. I mean, Camilleri's not playing with them much, no offense to them, but they're rebuilding there.
Yeah.
Put him with a guy that can then get him the puck. I mean, I think he can get back up to 15 power play goals a year. This is still a guy that has a good, solid 4 or 5 years left of hockey in him.
And he takes care of his body. He is in tremendous shape. Just like you, Ezzy. And that is something that you have to take into account to a guy going into his mid-30s.
Sure.
He takes care of his body. He works hard. Now, you'll hear some people say maybe sometimes he might rub people sometimes the wrong way in the room. I think that's been a little bit overblown, if that's the case at all. And he's going to find a spot.
Well, he left Montreal sort of under that cloud, but that Montreal team was so dysfunctional.
Yes,
you wonder if it was the front office and not the players in that instance.
Right, and you wonder maybe sometimes if he's too focused on too intense and two other things. But there's guys who, there's teams that need a guy like that. And I almost think every team needs a guy like that. I mean, he's played a little bit of center, but more so he's a winger.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be a market for a guy like that. To me, the question is it 3 or 4 years? That's the question. I think it's going to be 3 years. The question is it going to be 4 years?
If the biggest knock you can put on a player, or part of the reasons you say he might be a bit of a dressing room problem, is because he's too intense.
Yeah,
that's not the worst insult that I've ever heard handed down to a professional hockey player.
Andrew, let's be honest. Things have been overblown before in Montreal. Yeah. And that's not a knock against
Montreal.
That's not a knock against Montreal, because I'm a big fan of the city and the fans. I've always said the Bell Centre is my favorite arena in the NHL. So this isn't a knock against Montreal. I'm just saying,
you're worried about Montreal, the city's going to come and hurt you.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you worried about?
I'm just saying Mike Camilleri, I think that was all overblown, that he has attitude problems. You talk about a guy that he played with, Jerome Iginla, who just got his 12th 30 goal year. Incredible.
He's awesome.
Mike Camilleri is a guy that everybody has a lot of good things to say about, and it's on and off the ice. So even though he might not be a 75-80 point player, I still think he's a solid 60-30 goal, 60 point guy.
And I agree.
And then someone will pay $5 million a year for that.
Teams that are, you think, might be a good options, good fit for Mike Camilleri.
Well, you have to think that one team that I look to is, you know, the Kings, who the Jets are playing tonight, to fill a spot that I think Gabrick's probably on his way out. But then you have to look at the guys that they have in the system. We spoke to Nelson Emerson about guys like Tyler Toffoli, who have played well in limited time. Do the Kings feel like those guys will be ready maybe a year or two, and then a 3-year contract for a guy like Camilleri is probably too much? So, maybe. Then you look at a team like Anaheim, okay? Because people, you can do a lot of things with the cap. A team like Anaheim, Solani on his way out, mm-hmm. going to need to improve depth scoring. And replace the scoring that Bobby Ryan left last year. So that's going to be an interesting. I think California, where he has played before,
yep.
may be a landing spot for him. And then you look back east again, and there's going to be teams that, like Florida, who's going to be looking to spend money in the offseason, and to provide a guy like Alexander Barkov insulation in the scoring and scoring touch like Mike Camilleri is certainly an option as well. So I don't think there will be a lack of suitors for a guy like Camilleri, and those are just a number of teams I think will be interested.
Now people are going to say, well, what about the Jets? Not a fit, given the Jets have decent depth on the left side?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about him is he can find the right side, too. I really think you could probably put him on both sides.
That makes him more valuable.
It does, and I think that the Jets really obviously need that help. They need help on both wings, frankly, but I see your point, Drino, Kane and Ladd. If the Jets are going to be spending money, they ought to be spending it, to me, in the middle as opposed to on the wing.
Yep.
It doesn't mean that they don't need a winger. I think they do need a winger. I think he would help, but
I also don't know if the Jets are going to throw that kind of money at anybody. I don't know if the Jets are going to spend $5, $6 million on a player.
That's a fair point. And then, I think the Jets' needs in the offseason are going to be top six winger, mm-hmm. which he fits that bill. I just don't know if he fits with the Jets. I just don't think that would work. I think they're looking for different types of players. They need a center. We know that. They need a left winger, top nine left winger. Right. They need some fourth. I mean, they all had work to do. And they need a top four defenseman. So I just don't know. If you're going to be spending money on all that, I don't think you're going to allot all that money to Camilleri. I think you're looking to spend less money, as he mentioned, on a player to fill that role, which is difficult, but I think they'll be looking to do.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at the Eastern Conference wild card race and then the Western Conference wild card race. You can say it's the wild card half hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.